When I parted from my parents the day they left me at college, I remember my father bidding me farewell with these weighty words: "Don't forget who you are." You know what he meant. He did not mean that I was in danger of losing track of my name and street address. He meant that I might forget who I was. "Don't forget who you are" was his parental benediction as I went away to school. It's sometimes difficult in modern life, amidst the conflicting claims and confusion of names, to remember who we are. We are forever answering to some false name, forever misunderstanding who we are and by whom we have been named. And so it's easy to forget. I have sympathy with young people today. Who am I is a particularly pressing question in this culture we live in. The search for self, the quest for one's identity, consumes much of our early years. And today there are myriad causes, groups, philosophies, and cults willing and ready to tell us who we are. Who am I? You are mostly a sexual being, the movies, reality TV, and music tell you. Lusting and being lusted after. Your body is your most important possession. Nurture it, love it, display it, caress it. Go ahead, show it off. Who am I? You are mostly a brain, mostly a rational, thinking, reasoning being, absorbing facts and figures, going to school, endless school, bowing down before the temple of Athena, living only to learn, not learning to live. It's not who you are, but what you know. Schools tell our children for 16 years and more. Who am I? You are mostly a maker and spender of money, capitalist, doer, producer, obtainer, preparer for your first mortgage in suburbia with the two-car garage and 40-year payments, the market tells us. Who am I? You are the self-centered, autonomous, self-made being, the modern, scientific, secular world tells us. Nobody is going to look out for you but you. You are the most important project in your life. Nurture, care for, and love your life. Look out for number one, soothe, satisfy, make happy, thrill, care for your lonely little me. The truth is that the identity question of who am I is no longer done by age 21. I know people in their 30s, heck, in their 50s, who still ask the question, who still experiment with their lives, mixing with this and that, hoping the whole thing will gel before it blows up in their faces. They do not always answer to the same name, because the names keep changing, like Proteus, the Greek mythology hero who could change his shape at will. We're continually changing our shapes depending on what store we are in at the Galleria, going through endless protean metamorphoses as the situation demands. To the pressing "who am I" question, the church responds, "You are baptized." The way for a Christian to find out who he or she is not to jump on the back end of a Harley and head west, but rather to come to the font and look into those graceful waters. The reflection of yourself that you see there is who you really are. Who am I? You are someone to whom a name has been given. Name this child, the priests ask, when the child is brought to the font. This act of christening was the bestowal of the Christian name, as opposed to the child's family name, surname, by the church. In ancient times, the church literally named the child, often in memory of some favorite saint. The naming is reminiscent of a time when a person's name was changed after a conversion experience or some dramatic change in life. Think Simon becoming Peter. Think Saul becoming Paul. Life becomes a long process of trying that name on for size, growing into it, answering it, giving it meaning by the way we live our lives. At first, a big name like William or Catherine or Elizabeth or Arthur will sound strange when set upon a wee infant. But the child will grow into the name, filling it out until one day it feels natural, it fits, and you can't imagine the person with any other name. Whether one's name is actually given in the rite of baptism or not, baptism continues to be an occasion of naming. At baptism, each of us is given the name Christian. That name, at whatever age it is given, is a gift, unearned, unmerited, undeserved, like salvation itself. In doing so, the church makes a radically different statement about who we are and how we get to be who we are. We are telling the baptized person that his or her identity is a gift, a corporate endowment of the church, something bestowed on you by grace. We, who have been taught of late that identity is a personal discovery, the end result of rooting around in the darkness of our egos, the fleeting glimpses of ourselves as we drift from one momentary high to another, will be shocked to learn that identity is given rather than chosen. We do not discover our identity as a member of the human family. We do not earn our family name. We get them as gifts. We learned who we were through day-to-day love and care that our families show us. We learn what it is to be called by the name Christian in the same way. Give the new Christian time, and he and she will grow into the name, and it will fit well. Who am I? Baptism says not only that we are the ones to whom a name has been given, but also that we are royalty. We sin, of course, and we live less righteously than we ought. But our sin and our unrighteousness is significant and troubling only because we know that we are made for something better. Our sin is noteworthy. Our inhumanity is blasphemous only because it does not befit the character of one so worthy. Worthy because we have been made worthy, bought, adopted, made heir, elevated by the King of Kings himself. The Christian message is not that we should try hard to act like somebody. The Christian message simply is we are somebody. The church does not rest as long as even one of God's heirs is in misery, hunger, naked, oppressed, persecuted, or lost. We do not rest as long as any institution, government, or person seeks to warp or distort God's royal image in God's children. Who am I? Baptism says not only that we are named and that we are royalty, but also that we are owned by God forever. God keeps what God purchases, and on the cross, an awesome price was paid for you and me. I know someone who, in the wild and woolly 60s, lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts. His teenage daughter got caught up in the madness and ran away from home. And while he was gone, he would lay awake at night and think of her. And he said his only comfort was that she had been baptized, and no matter what happened, she was God's. Excuse me. In times of our doubt, inner turmoil, hopelessness, and confusion, we too would do well to touch our foreheads where the sign and seal of baptism was made, and remember that we are baptized. I wonder if any of you remember late in that movie, The Lion King, where young Simba has hightailed it out into the jungle after his father has been killed, and he abandons his identity as his father's heir, the true king of the jungle. One day, his mentor, the baboon Rafiki, challenges him to look at his reflection in a pond. Look down there. Simba responds, "That's not my father, that's just my reflection." "No, look harder," Rafiki challenges. And as the water ripples, Simba can see his father in his own reflection. "You see," Rafiki says, "he lives in you." And then Simba hears his father's voice from above. "Simba, father." "Simba, you have forgotten me." "No, how could I? You have forgotten who you are, and so you have forgotten me. Look inside yourself, Simba. You are more than you have become." "How can I go back? I'm not who I used to be." "Remember who you are. You are my son, the one true king. Remember who you are." Boys and girls, that is a Christian parable. It is a baptismal parable. It is a parable of how easy it is in the midst of life to forget who you are and whose you are. So the church is here to remind you, to remind one another that you have been bought with a price, that someone greater than you has named you and claimed you, and seeks you and loves you with only one good reason in mind, that you might love God for all eternity. Remember your baptism and be thankful for who you are. Amen.